present on a day-to-day or routine basis. You know, having a sinus infection with a headache and a cough is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about headaches and cough and fatigue and cognitive issues on an ongoing basis. I told you that we can use just symptoms and visual contrast. Here was 263 mold patients in red in this one slide, and using this least squares analysis, we can separate them from controls pretty nicely. Here's controls in blue and cases in red. We can use statistical methods like crazy to show sensitivity and specificity. That's even before we get to the labs. When we add in the lab analyses, we use five basic parameters. The difference between cases and controls is statistically significant with a p-value less than 0.001. So if you take five p-values and multiply them together, less than 0.001, and then add symptoms and add visual contrast, you can separate your cases of control with an accuracy of better than 1 in 1 times 10 to the 18th. It's phenomenal. But that's statistics and not medicine. How about all these different illnesses? Can you sort out what a guy has by his symptoms and his lab tests? No. Blue-green algae patients, mold patients, ciguatera, and Lyme patients, they're all the same in how they present. So you need to go more than that. I mentioned the neurotoxicology. Remember that visual contrast is a simple test. Let me just show you a few slides from neurotoxicology. It's a non-invasive measure of contrast. We're looking at the neurologic function of the optic nerve. We control for near vision, far, color, static motion, and peripheral vision. And if your vision acuity is better than 20/50, you can do this test. And what we want to do is to look not just at the normal visual contrast of 100%, where we look at visual acuity, but we look at 1.5 up through 18 cycles per degree of visual arc, and then we should see where people come out as normal. Most of your mold patients and the innate immune response people will be down in this range. Well, let's see what this looks like. Here we have just a simple control group at the top. This is just a mold study. This is a 156 patients and 111 controls. And it depends, doesn't really make any difference how they came to me, whether they're business or home related. It doesn't really matter whether you speciate the organisms or just see visible mold or even just musty smells. All the symptoms are going to be similar in this group. Visual contrast is the same. And then when you treat these patients in a repetitive exposure protocol, we can show that they're sick at baseline, they get better, we stop drug, keep them away from exposure, then just no change, then put them back in exposure, and we look at them in 3 days. And on day one, we measure labs, day two, we measure labs, day three, we measure labs. And we can give you the exact pattern of innate immune responses that develop with re-exposure. We don't have to guess in litigation anymore. This prospective acquisition of illness is incredibly important. This is proof of causation. And certainly in litigation, that's the big deal. But it also helps to know that you can help these people without putting them through lawsuit situations. Doesn't matter whether you are sick at your home or your workplace. Doesn't matter how many different groups we've done these studies in. What I want you to know is that the toxins and inflammagens, and there's a lot of them, found in water-damaged buildings all do the same kinds of things to people. We use our case definition. We use objective parameters. And then we can really kind of show you what we need to do. If you do see mold patients and they have proof of their illness with an air sample, it ain't so. Just no good at all. Use an ERMI, use a DNA test, EPA relative mold index, to get an idea of what is going on with actual chemical depiction of contamination. There are a lot of different things inside of a water damaged building. I don't think today we need to go through those too much. I've already told you that the case definition applies in mold illness, like all these biotoxin illnesses. Just to let you know that in children, it's a little bit different. We can't rely on the same hormone parameters, pituitary parameters, that we do in adults. In children, we use autoimmunity. TGF-beta-1 and anticardiolipin substitute for ACTH cortisol and ADH osmolality. And you're going to say, wait a minute, if that's true, TGF-beta-1 is going to be driving this thing. I say, yeah, you got it, right? And therefore, TGF-beta-1 should be higher in children than any other group. And I say, you get